Merry Christmas, everybody.
Prime Minister says he's looking to a brighter future and wishes peace for the Middle East in a Christmas message.
It's a time to remind ourselves what's really important. Family, friendship, and fellowship between all people. Being there for one another in these celebrations as well as the more difficult times.
Meanwhile, John Swinney says the Scottish Government's utmost priority is tackling child poverty in his own message. The government says it aims to restore clarity with a consultation on the petrol car phase-out. Labour's manifesto commitment is to restore the 2030 phase-out date for new purely petrol and diesel cars. A study finds that young people are now more likely to spend Christmas alone, with 1 in 9 people saying they will be alone this year. And new data shows information on alcohol consumption was among the top of the list for NHS advice being sought out on Christmas and Boxing Day last year. That's the latest from Radio News Hub. I'm Ellie Robson.
When you need a number fast, the only number you need is 118212.
Miss Maureen, the telephone detective, at your service.
Maureen! 118212.
Calls cost £2.50 per call, plus 75p a minute with a minimum 1 minute charge, plus your phone company's access charge.
Coming up, Africa in Focus.
Live on DAB Digital Radio, colorful.com, and apps. This is Colorful Radio.
Africa in Focus.
Colorful.
Colorful.
Colorful. Genius.
Colorful.
Colorful. Oh, colorful Radio.
Good morning. Good evening, or even good afternoon, depending on the time zone that you're connecting to us from. Welcome to Africa in Focus. Your host, Julius Baluto. Today is a wonderful day. Yes, kind of chilly here in London, but at the same time, we are going to a warm place. We don't have to be physically there, but because it's warm, we can warm up our thinking about being warm. And today we are connecting to the country of Zimbabwe, and that's our focus today. I'm going to be hosting a friend of mine, and also a lady who's doing quite a lot over here in the UK. She's the editor of News of the South.
Yes, News of the South.
News of the South. And her name is Eugene Majiro. Couple of wonderful memories I have for Zimbabwe when I was last there. But what actually stood out was the weather, the beauty of the country. Going to Victoria Falls, which happens to be 7 times bigger than Niagara Falls, was something. And also cruising on River Zambezi, which ends up its waters on the wonderful world-famous Falls of Victoria Falls. And there you go, great memories of Zimbabwe. But Zimbabwe, just like many other countries, has had great history and a lot of history, different groups of people in the country. And, interaction with colonialism as well, also something to think about. But you know what? You are tuning, or we are coming to you all the way from the heart of London on Colorful Radio. More about that, we'll be talking about it. But first and foremost, let me welcome the program. Welcome to the program, Eugene.
Thank you so much, Dr. Mbalito.
Because she's a princess, descendant of a king in Zimbabwe. So, yeah, good to have you. And today we are going to be talking about your book, The Barry Clan. Can you maybe just start to introduce us, what's the book about?
Okay, so the title of the book is The Barry Clan, A Profound Colonial History of Zimbabwe. So the book is about the history of my clan, the Barry clan. My great-grandfather, my ancestors, were the owners of Harare Kingdom, which basically is the territory Harare, Mount Hamden, Concession, and Mazowe. It's three cities which form the kingdom of Harare. So that's what the book is all about. And then it also talks about what happened before colonialism. And then it connects you to the colonial era and then takes you all the way through to the 20th century.
Indeed. So someone who is not from Zimbabwe, we only know Harare. So Harare, is it part of those three places that connect, or where they were, the Barry clan was living?
Yes, Harare was the main area.
Then Harare is the capital city of Zimbabwe, yeah.
Yeah. Then Mount Hamden is the city besides Harare. And then Mazowe is the next city on the other side. So the three cities are all like together.
Wow. So amazing how African, how in Africa words connect, and they almost sound the same despite coming from east and west or south. Because when you say, if you come to Kenya and you say Barry clan, some Kenyans may think, yeah, from actually exact spelling, I think it's from Kikuyu community. The word Barry means clan.
Okay.
So when you say the Barry clan, they'll be like, it's the same, isn't it? But if the Barry in Zimbabwe is a group of people, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a group,
and it's basically those three places you mentioned. That's where they come from.
Yes, that's right.
Wow. Okay. So probably earlier days, I think you connect to this king, your granddaughter.
My great grandfather.
Yeah, explain to us a bit of the history.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you can explain to us that part of the history, how you are connected to the king. And
okay, so my great grandfather was the king of Harare, and he had 7 wives and 56 children. So out of the 56 children, that's where we have the Majuru. Okay. So you have like Tom, Daniel, Majuru, and other names like that. So I am from the Majuru side of the family. If you understand what I mean, when you have the family tree, you have like 56 children, and those children have their children who then have their children. So I'm from the Majuru branch, and the Majuru child of King Barry settled in Murewa. It's a city called Murewa. If you read the book, you see how during colonialism, when they were given the orders by Queen Victoria to totally make sure that nobody exists of the Barry clan, so that they would never rise again, our ancestor realized this is what was happening, so instructed everyone to run away and go as far as possible and disperse in different directions and make sure that wherever they settle, they don't use any name which connects them with Harare or with the king of Harare, so that they can survive. Others were even told to use their mother's totems. So Majuru went and settled in a city called Murewa. Then you have others like Biza. They settled in another city. And then we have the Chifambas. They settled in another city. So you find that the Barry clan is scattered all across Zimbabwe. But that's not the setup that we have in Zimbabwe. Every clan is confined to their own area.
Like ancestral land, isn't it?
Yes, that's true.
So they were scattered because of colonialism, yeah?
Yes, they were scattered because of colonialism. So, as you know, Zimbabwe got independence in 1980. It's been 44 years after independence, and we still haven't managed to resuscitate the Mbari clan's kingdom, because we are scattered all over, And the worst thing that the British did was they changed the constitution. They made the constitution in such a way that to come back would be very difficult. They put some clauses on the traditional act that a city should never have a traditional administration. So when you look at it, you see that when colonialism took place, some of the cities, they never fought the battles with the British. It's Harare and a few other cities that fought the battle. And then when you get to understand why Harare is important, you see when they only managed to get hold of Harare, then they said, we have taken Zimbabwe, which shows that the center of the power for Zimbabwe is in Harare. And when they managed to take Harare, they then erected the Union Jack flag.
You said probably there was a connection between the city of Harare and your great-grandfather?
Yes, definitely. He owned the city. He owned the area. There were a lot of other kings in other cities. They used to come and they used to consult him. He was very powerful spiritually and physically. And he was a very wise man as well. He would also help people who were sick. He had healing powers. He was known as a paramount chief. I don't know if you know about the use of the paramount chiefs. It also came about because the British downgraded the titles of the African kingdoms. In various countries in Africa, when they talk about their kings, they say chiefs. This is a word that was imposed on the Africans by the colonialists. And up to now, many African countries are still using the word chiefs, something that was given to them by the British. You see how Africans really ended up being so colonized. They were even given dressing to wear by these colonialists. For example, in Zimbabwe, our chiefs wear some funny gowns with red and purple, and they were badly designed. They even wear the builder's helmets. You will not believe it. They were given the builder's helmet to wear by the British, and they're still wearing it up to today. To look at it, you see that Zimbabwe is independent. We have a lot of creative artists and designers who can easily design the headgear for the chiefs. They could also easily design the gowns worn by the chiefs, but this is not happening. Then you ask yourself, where is the problem here? We have a lot of things that were messed up because of colonialism, and now we are independent. We have the power to sort out these things and correct whatever needs to be corrected. I'll give you an example. We have some roads that were named after the colonialists, like Moffat Street, Livingstone Street. We have a lot of them, really. Some of them have been renamed to African and Shona names, but we still have a lot. We have the city of Mount Hamden, which is part of Harare Kingdom. Our Zimbabwean government have made plans to shift the capital city to Mount Hamden. But Mount Hamden was a colonialist who caused the death of many people. But the city is still named Mount Hamden up to today. So you see, sometimes we as Africans, we are failing to do a few things. We have like other cities in Nigeria. We have Port Harcourt. It was named after a colonialist who caused the death of many Nigerians. But they're still using that name, Port Harcourt, for their city. We have the largest and most attractive tourist attraction in Zimbabwe and Zambia. It's named Victoria Falls after Queen Victoria, who was the person who gave the orders to say, kill those people, take the land. And she even gave orders to say, go after these people who are leading the resistance against colonialism, kill them, cut their head off, bring the heads here as war trophies. As you know, we are fighting to get the heads of our ancestors that are currently in various cities in the UK and in British museums. She's the one who caused all that. Our Africans in Zambia and Zimbabwe, they know all this history. But unfortunately, they are maintaining that name. I don't think there's any reason to be maintaining that name, because Victoria Falls was previously known as Mosio Tunya. And a lot of people, they know that it's called Mosio Tunya. But these two countries, they had conversations a couple of years ago to rename the Victoria Falls. So one side
David Livingstone, wasn't it?
One side says, let's keep it Victoria Falls.
It was David Livingstone, isn't it? So
yes.
And I know what you mean. During colonial era, probably for those who don't know, a lot of British settlers in different countries, they will just go and even in Kenya, we have Lake Victoria. Lake Victoria had original Kenyan names before it was named Lake Victoria. So when you look into different countries, it's the most hilarious thing. You go to someone's country, you begin to say, I discovered this, and you rename it. It's as if there were no people there before you arrived. So it's the same thing with when it came to the Victoria Falls. I had an original name of Tony, and I think it was David Livingstone. After his travels, he realized, came across these falls, and he was like, I'm going to rename this one Queen, you know, Victoria Falls, after Queen Victoria. So it's truly, these experiences are all over former colony, British colonies.
This is Colorful Radio.
Colorful Radio.
Your great-grandfather was a leading light in terms of fighting against colonialism in Zimbabwe. Maybe do you want to shed light how it happened and who was he with and then what happened?
Okay, so what happens when the British arrived, they started fighting. And by the time that the British arrived, my grandfather had died. My grandfather lived for a very long time. And by the time the British arrived, it was his young brother who was the king. His name was King Makombe. So because my grandfather was gifted spiritually and he was also the king, he was kept busy because he had so much responsibilities to take care of the spiritual side of things and to be the king. So he then decided to hand over power to his young brother Makombe so that he could concentrate on the spiritual side of things. So when British arrived, it was Makombe who was the king. And he was residing in the city of Mazowe, the other city that I mentioned that forms part of the Harare Kingdom. He fought a very, very big battle with the British. And if you read some of the history books, you can understand why they wanted to make sure that they kill every single member of the Mbaru clan. Okay. So because they knew the terrain, they were able to hide in the caves and they did a lot of ambushes and they took the British by surprise. They had inferior weapons, but they managed to kill a lot of the British. And this surprised the British. They couldn't understand why they were managing to kill them, you know. So also remember that our ancestors had other spiritual abilities. They could foretell the future. They could foretell what will happen tomorrow. And they used those abilities to plan the battle for them for the next day. And they took them by surprise. So what then happened is most of the people, they just disappeared. And the British South African Army, when they were fighting, they realized that the people had all disappeared. They couldn't understand where the people had gone to. So they consulted other clan groups like the Wata. The Wata especially, they are responsible for causing the death of many of our people because they sold out. They went and they told the British and showed them that they are hiding in the caves. So what they then did is they went around with them and say, the caves are here and here and here. And they would point to the entrances of the caves. And then the British South African Army would come and throw dynamite at the entrances of the caves. And the people just perished in those caves. So till today, as we speak now, the remains of those people killed in the caves are still there. We can't go in and get those remains out to give them a proper burial because we have to do some cleansing ceremonies. So now, because you see, we haven't got the kingdom back, we can't do the cleansing ceremonies because these cleansing ceremonies are supposed to be led spiritually by the King Barry. So if we were having a current King Barry at the moment, he would be the one to lead these cleansing ceremonies. So it puts us in a very, very difficult situation. We need to sort out all the mess that was caused by colonialism, was caused by the British. And then when you think about it, there are thousands and thousands of remains in the caves. Who's going to be paying for that? Does it mean that we, the surviving descendants, should go and get the remains and pay for the reburial? Because it's going to be a very costly exercise. This is the reason why, you see, we keep reaching out to the British to say we need to talk. We need to have conversation about the ills of colonialism. When you look at the problems caused by colonialism, there were quite a lot. But for a case like Dambari clan, the problem is unique. It's all different. It's all different because they took over the capital city and completely displaced the clan. So as we speak, we can safely call ourselves destitute because we are residing in the lands of other kingdoms and we are scattered all over.
Yeah, indeed. And when you talk about spirituality and colonialism, if you go to perhaps a country like Ghana, they took the golden stool, symbolism of rulership. And I think why they were doing that, it just to say, we have taken over. If you have taken the thing that mean a lot to you guys, it's like symbolically, you know, it's we are conquered. We have conquered. We come to perhaps Kenya as well, other countries as well. They will focus on the thing that united people a lot, symbolizing rulership as well. In your case, in Zimbabwe, when you talk about also spirituality, I think also Kenya, for example, during the Mau Mau, you know, struggle against colonialism, they would spend thousands of pounds to administer a traditional spiritual process to decontaminate those who were recruited to be members of the Mau Mau. You go to Tanzania, also colonialism. There was also the African spiritual forces being used in the fight against colonialism. In Tanzania, they call it Majimaji Rebellion. And they used to think if you shoot at them, and they used that kind of water or whatever it was, the bullet to convert into water, it wouldn't reach them. Of course, it didn't happen that way. In the end, they were shorted and bullets reached them. So when we come to Zimbabwe, also in your book, we see a lot of spiritual processes there. Like places, if you go, you disappear. Like places in Zimbabwe, which you talk in your book, the people are not supposed to go there. But which you say in your book that colonial authorities violated these places by building on them. Can you shed some light on that?
Yeah, that's true. When you go to sacred places, you are not supposed to do certain things. There are certain things that you're allowed to do and other things you're not allowed to do. For example, if you feel that you need to relieve yourself and you relieve yourself in those sacred areas, you just disappear. Nobody will find you. And it's up to the relatives of the person who has disappeared to find out who is the owner of that land. Then they have to approach the chief, and then they are told they have to pay some compensation, and then this clan would have to do some traditional ceremonies to make these people come back. I'm sure you've read in the book there's an incident that happened for two girls who disappeared, twins. They disappeared when they went to Mount Nyangani. They were in that same area that I was talking about, that it's sacred. But then you find people who are not Africans, they would argue and say, we are not Africans, we are not connected to your culture and your tradition, so these things don't apply to us. There is the other person I mentioned in the book who also disappeared in Mount Nyangani. And it ended up being a worldwide search. They brought in all types of equipment. They brought in rescuers from all over the world to try and find him, but they couldn't find him. When we talk about our spirituality, our culture and traditions, people who are not Africans, they don't believe that we have a culture, we have our spiritualism, but these things were in existence well before us. They are still in existence today, and they are still working. So it's just like when you look at our forefathers, they had special abilities that they had. The fact that they've died, they are now gone, doesn't mean that those abilities and those powers have been buried with them. They are still in existence. For example, I'll talk about the spirituality of an area called Zwarasekwa in Harare. Zwarasekwa is a suburb in Harare. Yeah? So when the government was trying to build the army barracks, they had to build like 7 times before they could successfully build these army barracks. Because every time they built, what was happening is the next morning they would find that the structures that had been built would be demolished. So it kept happening and they couldn't understand why. So they finally hired security to be at the site. There was security overnight. They didn't see anybody coming. They didn't hear any noise. But in the morning, the structures that had been built the previous days were demolished again, until they had to say, okay, we now need to find the owners of the land because this problem appears to be spiritual. So they then went and sought for the Mbari clan and invited them to come and sort out the problem. So the Mbari clan went and they did some traditional ceremonies at the site where they communicate with the ancestors to ask on behalf of the government, say, can you allow them to build these barracks that they need to build? So only after that was done were they able to build. And we still have the army barracks in existence today. So during the time that all this drama, this spiritual drama was happening, the Chinese who were building the barracks, every time they were digging the trenches, they would find some snakes. Every time they dug up, they found snakes. And then they wanted to eat the snakes, but they were advised by the government and traditional leaders that they could not eat the snakes because they were spiritual snakes. So still talking about spirituality, we have a snake, a big snake that lives in the Mukwisi River. The Mukwisi River is a river that runs along Harare. So there was a snake that used to live in that river. It was called Mukuyajio. So this snake has been in existence for more than 100 years. If you search on Google, you will see there's a story and a video. I think this happened sometime last month in November. You will see that this snake is appearing. It comes out and people see it. It's a very, very huge snake. And they try to get the national parks to come and remove the snake. The national parks in Harare went and they went to the area. They saw the snake, but they said, no, 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 we can't touch it. They left it because it's spiritual. If you try to touch or tamper with something spiritual, you have to face the consequences of what will happen. Because there's no reason to remove this snake. It has lived there for 100 years and it serves its purpose. So the people who know about the spirituality of the snake are the Mbari clan, because they are the owners of the land. Should there be any problem, it is the Mbari clan who have to communicate to the ancestors to say, can you sort out this problem? So the interesting thing about this snake is that it comes out of the river at 2 o'clock, at 2 p.m. every day. So if you are passing by And or if you want to go and see it, you go at 2 p.m. It knows that is 2 p.m. It comes out and it's just there in the river. And people will be looking and taking pictures and videos. And some of the people who went and witnessed it with one of the TV stations in Zimbabwe, they were explaining that when the snake comes out and they're standing on the bridge, the snake is not moving. It's just there in sight. The bridge actually shakes. It vibrates. It shakes. You see? So people were saying, why is the snake coming out? When things like this happen, it means that the ancestors are trying to communicate that there is a problem that needs to be sorted out. And the biggest problem in Harare is that the ancestors want their land back. This information has been communicated for a very long time. They want the land back. So you see that maybe in the next few weeks or in the next few months, there will be a series of other things that will be happening there because the ancestors are calling for their land back. You can ignore spiritual things, but it comes to a point where some problems will arise. Even if you bring any technology or anything to try and resolve spiritual problems, you cannot do it. I'll give you another example of another area outside Harare Kingdom. The Chinese were trying to dig and do some mining, but every time they were trying the machinery would break down. They bring another set of machinery and they'll all break down because they are trying to mine and dig in a sacred area which has its spirituality. So for you to manage to do that, you've got to respect the laws of the land and seek permission from the owners of the land. So the clan in that particular area would need to conduct some traditional and cultural ceremonies to communicate with the ancestors to say, these people want to be mining and using this area. Can they do it? If the ancestors say no, nobody can go there. If you try and continue to go and do against what the ancestors are saying, they'll just deal with you. You can disappear or you can just die because African spirituality is still as powerful as it was before.
And it was during colonial era, it was demonized and also not valued. Of course, we...
Yes, I agree with you. What happened is, I'll give you an example of the British because the history that I know mostly about colonialism is the British because they are the ones who came and colonized Zimbabwe. They brought in a lot of missionaries all over the country. The missionaries were teaching people about the Bible. And
come on to that.
Colorful radio.
Colorful radio.
In July in Zimbabwe, when I went to Zimbabwe and they informed me that one of my assignments is to talk about our history, to present so that people know the history. They know the history about the capital city of Zimbabwe, and they also know about the history that links some of the things that happened or are happening in Zimbabwe. It's a very, very important assignment that I have. So yeah, I got the inspiration from my forefathers. And if you see some of the history that's in the book, it's history that you've never heard about. Our people have never heard about this history because our ancestors have a great connection with us. So when you look at the issue of pushing for the remains of the Zimbabweans to go back to Zimbabwe is also through that. It's also through that. It was later on that I was told that for you to be in the United Kingdom, it didn't happen by coincidence. Our ancestors made it possible that you go there, but the mission is to make sure that I engage the British to ensure that they return the remains for Zimbabwe as well as our artifacts. And I need to continue to push the Zimbabwean government to make sure that these remains go back to Zimbabwe. I didn't plan to be doing this.
When you say remains, for those who don't understand, can you maybe...
Okay, our forefathers were killed during colonialism by the British. They were beheaded and their heads were taken and brought to England as war trophies. Some of the heads have been in the museums on display until our former president, Robert Mugabe, made noise about it and demanded that the British bring those heads. He actually described it and said, you have no shame to be displaying human remains in the museum. You need to bring these heads back. That was when the British then took those cows from display. So now they are packed in the archives or in the basements with no respect. Or maybe even in our museum. Imagine how they would feel about it. So this is the same pain that we feel in knowing that, okay, we are surviving today, but our ancestors are not resting in peace. Their heads are just being thrown all over everywhere. I remember last year I went to Cambridge University and had a meeting with the people at Cambridge, and they showed us some of the skulls that they have. They showed us one particular skull of a male adult who was killed during colonialism, and they have the head there at Cambridge University. They use it for their studies, but this is somebody's ancestor. That could be one of my ancestors. They are using them, touching them, and maybe they say, they say bad things or jokes. They don't treat with respect, but we are the surviving descendants. We can't accept that. I know in recent months we've had people like Keir Starmer uttering nonsense, saying that Africans should forget and move on. How do I forget and move on when they have the heads of my ancestors? And meanwhile, spiritually, my ancestors are communicating with me and urging me to get the heads back and make sure that we get their heads back to Zimbabwe so that they can be buried and have a dignified burial so they can rest in peace. We can never keep quiet. We can never accept it. We can't say we are moving on. It's not possible.
Yeah, what are your thoughts when you listen to people like Kemi Badenoch? And of course, she was criticized by Vice President of Nigeria recently for denigrating her country of origin. What comes to your mind? Because she has spoken about colonialism and reparations and stuff like that.
I couldn't believe it when I heard these statements coming from Kemi Badenoch. To start with, I was very happy for her that a Black woman is now leading Conservative Party. But a few days afterwards, I was really shocked to hear the statements that she makes. She actually forgets that she's Black and she's African. I know she's married to a white person, but that doesn't make her a white person at all. Most of her relatives who are in Africa, they are still suffering the ills of colonialism. So for her to be saying these statements is very, very, very irresponsible of her. She doesn't know who she is. She doesn't know where she's going. I guess she says these statements because she wants to fit in with the British and be accepted by the British. But the very same people that she expects to be accepting her are not accepting her in their hearts because it doesn't change the fact of who she is. She's Black. Most of them are racist, okay? Most of them are racist. They know she's Black. It doesn't make her a white person at all. And she even said that most of the wealth that Britain has didn't come from colonialism. She says she doesn't want immigrants to be coming to the United Kingdom. I don't support that. Immigrants should come in large numbers because they suffered, their ancestors suffered from slave trade. Their ancestors suffered, they were displaced, they were killed, they were treated so bad. And now they want a better life. I don't see why immigrants shouldn't become. They should come in millions. Yeah? They should come in millions and enjoy the wealth from their ancestors because all this wealth that England has came from Africa and other continents where they were colonizing people. So it's time for it's payback time. They should pay back and look after these immigrants. So what do you think?
And in terms of our reparation, is because, of course, controlled immigration is happening in different countries. British citizens are investing in Africa, becoming citizens of different countries in Africa. To me, it's a question of we cannot begin to say don't come. If it's legal,
yes,
immigration is fine. The only problem is illegal, whereby then that's different. It's outside the arrangement of the law. But I don't know. It's controversial. She has made controversial statements. She's talking about she doesn't want Britain to be like the country she fled from, which is Nigeria, signification of poverty and all that. What that she doesn't say? Today, big oil corporates, British corporates, are harvesting millions in the same country that's supposed to be poor.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't say Nigerian investors own properties worth millions in this country. She doesn't say
that.
The money is silently okay, but the country and the people, are seen as different. So she has made
conclusions. Yeah, I wrote a lot about the statements made by Kemi Badenoch in the book, and I analyzed a lot of it. I analyzed a lot as well about statements which came from David Cameron, Rishi Sunak. Who is the other one? Yeah, I did a lot on the book. So if you read the book, you can connect those statements and link with what happened during colonialism and how Africans are still suffering, especially my clan. My clan is suffering a lot because of the ills of colonialism. And for the role that I play, I have to keep talking about it. And I have a mission to make sure that these issues are resolved. We need to bury our people and give them dignified burial. We need to resuscitate the Harare Kingdom. And the British are responsible for it. We need to engage with them. We will keep talking. We will keep writing letters. And just yesterday, I sent a letter to King Charles and to Prince William requesting that we have dialogue about this, the mess that displaced the family, the clan of Dambari.
And when you pursued this, what have they ever given you explanation? Because to say, bring heads of these former Dambari clan leaders back to Zimbabwe, what do they say? I remember one time we hosted this big meeting, changing narrative, and in it, I came across some academics, professors, talking about why does the British want to keep body organs of other people from other countries. And I remember one argument was like, it's part of our heritage. I'm like, what kind of heritage? I mean, what explanation have they ever given?
I wrote a letter to Queen Elizabeth in 2018 in September. Within 7 days, they replied and said that the Queen was very busy, so she didn't have time to make an appointment to discuss with me. But I understand everybody is busy. I'm busy as well. You are busy, but they have to make the time to have this discussion. This discussion has got to take place because I know when they were preparing for the Commonwealth, they were actually refusing for this issue of reparations and colonialism to be on the agenda of the Commonwealth. If you read in my book, I also talked about the Commonwealth and said that the Commonwealth does not serve its purpose. It's collecting membership fees from their former colonies, and the membership fees that they pay is quite a lot of money. So they take this money, they invest it. After investing it and making more money with it, then they take a little chunk of it and they give to these African countries and they say, we are giving you a donation. We never even see these donations. The donations that they give is just like a drop in the ocean. How many people benefit from those donations? They are just too small. So I think it's time for these former colonies who are in the Commonwealth to think about the Commonwealth and what is really, really happening. Why is it that the British are the ones who are in charge of the Commonwealth? If they are member countries, they should all be the same. And they should be rotating to say this year or after 2 years, is this country which is leading the Commonwealth. They continue to lead the Commonwealth because they want to control people. They are dictators, and yet they are quick to point it. They are quick to point fingers at other countries to say this leader is a dictator, that leader is a dictator. They are dictators themselves, and I don't understand why these countries are still in the Commonwealth. And I also wrote about it that our former president Robert Mugabe did well to remove Zimbabwe from the Commonwealth. They have the Commonwealth Games where people go and do games. Are Africans not able to organize their own games? We have SADC, we have African Union, we have a few organizations for Africans, but it's time for Africans to think and to make sure that they undo the ills of colonialism, because by continuing to be in the Commonwealth, they are accepting that they should be dictated on. The Commonwealth say it is there for the purpose of development. But when you look at these things, you can see that they can say they want to build factories or they want to build some sporting places. They go and they chop down the forests, all in the name of development. But what are they doing to the environment? All they are interested in is continuing to take minerals from Africa. Mm. Oh, we want to improve relations with Africa. We want to improve relations with Africa. They are trying to continue to take the minerals, continue from where the ancestors left off. But now the thing is, they try to do neocolonialism straightforward. But because they can't manage us, our generation, they can't manage to do to us what they did to our ancestors. We are a different generation. We speak up, we fight.
Indeed.
We speak up, we fight. If we are not happy about something, we say no. Okay? So they are now going through the back door. They are now going through the back door, trying to colonize Africa through the back door. If the back door does not succeed, they'll do it through the window. This is how cunning these former colonizers are. They'll do it through the window. They'll keep trying.
We'll see how it goes. By the way, thank you for your time. And again, congrats for book. Read it, extremely interesting. I recommend it to any other person to purchase. And
remember, we don't stop until the music stops. And the music never stops on Colorful Radio. Remember that.
And In my chest, whoa, whoa, bad brain. Mariki, baby, oh. Yeah.
Sexy. I love the way you wind up, baby. Body. Sexy rotate, you rotate. I rotate, baby, showcase, you showcase. I showcase. Bend your lowest, your lowest, your lowest, your lowest. Money there for my hand, yo. Oh. Happy to change your life, oh, 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 oh. Give it to me.
Ah, sexy. Ah, sexy.
Oh, oh, ah, sexy.
Ah, sexy.
Give it to me.
Ah, sexy. Ah, sexy.
Oh, ah, sexy.
Baby, ah, sexy.
Pull up in my room, ah. In my room, ah. In my room, ah. Baby girl, pull up in my room, ah. In my room, ah. In my room, ah. Oh, baby girl, pull up in my room, ah. In my room, ah. In my room, ah. One sugar. Pull up in my room, ah. In my room, ah. In my room, ah.
Mind for me. Give me that thing. Where they make a man crazy. Maybe when you wind that thing, nah. But my people can't deny that thing. Wind for me, give me that thing. Give me that thing where they make man crazy. Baby, this your body, no be rumor, rumor. Innocent with the face. Dance the fire, yeah, till you tire, yeah. Dance and wine and bust the speaker. Drink the water, quench the fire. My head in my back, in my chest. Baby, dance the fire, yeah, till you tire, yeah. Dance and wine and bust the speaker. Quench your fire, my head in my back, in my chest. Give it to me.
Ah, sexy. Ah, sexy.
Whoa, ah, sexy.
Ah, sexy.
Give it to me.
Ah, sexy. Ah, sexy.
Together, hold on to your baby, oh. And if that your boobies behave, me say for baby.